The 100 Years' War, the Du Guesclin period, the invasion of Gascony, 1374. As soon as the news of John of Gaunt's departure was confirmed, the Duke of Anjou sent his agents in the Castile to press upon Henry of Trastamara a new project for a joint invasion of Gascony. Anjou was keen to take advantage of the disarray in the English duchy and the presence of a large Castilian army on the southern foothills of the Pyrenees. The idea was for the Castilians to enter the duchy across the mountains from the south, while Louis of Anjou attacked with his own army through the valley of the Ardour and joined forces with them outside of Bayonne. Bayonne would have been a great prize for both men. It was the principal maritime city of Gascony and the chief commercial rival of the Basque ports. Its galleys and merchantmen represented the main threat to Castilian command of the sea lanes across the Bay of Biscay. Its capture would probably have led to the loss of the whole of the Ardour River Valley, loosening English control in the south of the duchy and making it exceptionally difficult to attempt another invasion of Castile. But if the plan was well conceived, its execution was not. The first Castilian forces to appear were a fleet of eight galleys from the arsenal at Seville, which were on their way to join the French fleet in the Channel. They arrived off Bayonne about the middle of June 1374 under the command of the Admiral of Castile, Fernand Sanchez de Tovar. Henry of Trastamara followed shortly afterwards with his army and took the coast road from San Sebastian, the difficult terrain where the foothills of the Basque Mountains descend steeply to the sea. The conditions were particularly bad in 1374. It had been a late spring. The melting snows had turned the rivers into torrents, spreading out when they reached the coast into impassable tidal swamps. The Castilian king had made no preparations to supply his army by land or sea. As a result, the troops were already in a wretched state when they crossed the Bidossa River, and Bayonne had never been directly attacked before, and it was usually ungarrisoned. Some prominent inhabitants of the town, including the bishop, assumed that all was lost and fled when the Castilians arrived beneath their walls, but they underestimated the resilience of the English government in a region which had always belonged to it, even in the darkest hours of the Gascon duchy. In Bordeaux, the government was in the hands of two caretaker lieutenants, the mayor of Bordeaux, Sir Robert Roos, and the Gascon veteran, Fleurimond de Lespar. They had enough warning about what was afoot to organize the defense. The suburbs of Bayonne were, as usual, flattened. The citizens were organized in the districts under their own captains and artillery distributed amongst them. Reinforcements were sent from Bordeaux under the command of Sir William Elmham, a confidant of John of Gaunt, who was one of a small band of soldiers that the Duke had left behind to stiffen the defense of the duchy. Another of them, Sir Matthew Gurney, was sent to Dax to hold the valley of the Ardour River against the approach of the Duke of Anjou. Fleurimond de Lespar occupied the territory of Mansarin around Sustons, whose lord and the Viscount of Castelbon had chosen this moment to throw in his lot with the Duke of Anjou. When Henry of Trastamara arrived outside the walls of Bayonne on June the 21st, he found the whole region well defended and completely cleared of supplies. The Duke of Anjou, who should have been on his way with help and stores, was nowhere to be seen. He had been sidetracked in May by a strange project for the invasion of Aragon by a confederation of Aragonese exiles and routier bands, which predictably dissolved in the chaos and recrimination, leaving large parts of the Rhone Valley at the mercy of the companies of frustrated brigands. Anjou was obliged to pass several weeks in large-scale police operations in eastern Languedoc. As a result, he was away from Toulouse until June the 22nd, 1373. No sooner had he returned than he was diverted from his purpose by fresh reports of routier activity, this time around Montauban. The envoys of the King of Castile demanded to know what happened to his plan to meet Henry outside of Bayonne. The truth was, Anjou had lost interest in Bayonne. He sent apologies to Henry of Trastamara and turned north to face the new threat at Quercy. The Castilian king refused to wait. He folded his tents and marched home in disgust. These distractions prevented the French from mounting any serious military actions against the English in the southwest until late July 1374. By this time, the probability of military assistance from Castile had simply melted away. On about July the 22nd, the Duke of Bourbon arrived outside of Brive, the only notable conquest of which John of Gaunt had made on his great march through France. The place was defended only by its citizens and a small English garrison of 50 men. The Bourbon troops assaulted the walls from two sides at once and fought their way over the top and into the streets. The garrison fled to the church, where they tried to bargain for their lives from the top of the tower, but the building was stormed and every one of them was killed. A relief force was dispatched by English lieutenants from Bordeaux, but it was still some 30 miles away when the town fell. The consuls who had let in the enemy were beheaded beside the walls through which the English had entered 8 months before. Their remains were exhibited on the walls as a warning to others who might mistake the fleeting appearance of English troops for a permanent revival of their fortunes. About a week later, Bourbon joins forces with Anjou at Toulouse. The two royal dukes marched out of the city on August the 1st, accompanied by the constable and the leading magnates of the southwest with about 4,000 troops. The army moved west down the valley of the Garonne and in about the middle of the month appeared outside La Ruelle. La Ruelle was the strongest English fortress in the Garonne Valley and the main barbican of the east march of the duchy. The town itself, defended by three circuits of walls, was dominated at its western extremity by the great square citadel with its four towers planted on the rock. Originally built by Richard the Lionhearted and continually strengthened by his successors to defend the approaches to Bordeaux. Since any French army operating in the region would need to be supplied by river, the capture of La Ruelle was an essential preliminary to any French invasion of the Bordelais. As at Bayonne, the English had plenty of time to prepare to defense. The citadel had been resupplied with food and armed with artillery. A large garrison was put into it under the command of the redoubtable Sir Hugh Calverley. But the outcome was very different. Shortly after the siege had begun, the English attempted a sortie against the encampment of the Duke of Bourbon. They were beaten back, and when they tried to return through the gate by which they had left, they were unable to stop the French from coming in after them. The outer circuit of the walls was lost, together with some of the richest quarters of the city and a large quantity of food. Calverley did not have the support from the town that Elham had enjoyed at Bayonne. The leading citizens went out to parley with the French commanders. They agreed to open their gates. On August the 21st, 1374, the Duke of Anjou entered the town. It was only a matter of time before the citadel followed. As the French had discovered when they lost the place to Henry of Lancaster in 1345, the citadel was weaker on the town side than towards the river, and was overlooked by the tower of the Church of St. Pierre. On August the 28th, Calverley decided that it could not be defended. A conditional surrender was agreed to, by which the garrison undertook to surrender on September the 8th if Edward III or one of his sons had not come to its relief by then. It was simply pure face-saving. Calverley knew perfectly well that no relief force could be organized within 10 days, even without Edward III or one of his sons. On September the 8th, 1374, the Duke of Anjou was the master of La Ruelle. This left as the only real obstacles to the French advance on Bordeaux, the twin fortresses of Saint-Macaire and Langon, on either side of the Garonne River, some 30 miles from the city. The English took urgent measures to reinforce both places. Florimond de Lespar set about organizing the defense of the capital. A few days after Calverley's surrender at La Ruelle, the French host arrived before the walls of Saint-Macaire. A better planned and more persistent campaign might have brought the war to the suburbs of Bordeaux, but quite suddenly, towards the end of September, the French withdrew. The reason for this sudden change in plans is far from clear. Saint-Macaire was not strong, and the English forces in the region were very thinly spread. Nor was Anjou short of money. The estates of Languedoc had been milked for subsidies. Anjou's treasurers had been busy sending money to the front since the beginning of the campaign. The explanation probably lies in the Duke's unwillingness to spend it. He was an instinctive hoarder of treasure, and had his own ambitions as well as his brother's to fulfill. By early October, he was back in Toulouse, where he paid off the troops, pressing lavish gifts on their commanders. The English lieutenants must have been extremely relieved, but only the immediate threat had gone. To well-informed observers, the future of the English in Gascony must have seemed incredibly bleak. Now, the sources for this: The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.